So over the last 20 years, the specialist coaches have been a growing field. Many top programs, they've got their strength and conditioning coaches, they've got their nutritionists, they have their skills trainers, and they all have their mental performance coaches or their sports psychologists. I've gone through a lot of great sports psychology books over the years, and I've interviewed some fantastic sports psychologists. And the research is clear, visualization and positive self-talk, they can and they're going to improve performance. But when I read the book Intangibles, Big League Stories and Strategies for Winning the Mental Game in Baseball and in Life by Jeff Miller, it had a very, very refreshing and different perspective or kind of angle on the mental game. It really focuses in large part on the performance identity trap, you know, that pressure and anxiety that grows the more we connect our self-worth and our value to our performance. And we discussed this at length with Kate Fagan, the author of What Made Many Run, on the podcast a few months ago, and the detrimental effects of that trap. Well, today we are lucky to have Jeff Miller, you know, the author of Intangibles, and the current mental skills coach at the Philadelphia Phillies on the podcast. He was also at the Pirates, Nationals, and the Braves before he got to Philly. I'm excited for these next two episodes because he shares how we don't have to be a mental skills coach to help our players with the mental game. We just have to be a willing mentor. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast, brought to you by Thrive on Challenge. I'm JP Nurbin, joined by my friend and co-host Nate Sanderson. Each week in about 30 minutes, we discuss important principles and strategies of transformational leadership. At Thrive on Challenge, we help coaches to raise the standards and strengthen the relationships in their program because we know this type of culture produces better leaders, better people, and better results. To learn more about how we can help you, go to thriveonchallenge.com, where you can also subscribe to our weekly newsletter and get the coaching notes to every episode of this podcast. So one of the things that I know I've struggled with over the years is knowing how to approach competition and practice. I've always been a big fan of competing, creating competition in nearly everything within the practice, but I was unsure of how to do that in a healthy way. So for years, I played around with running the losing team, offering rewards to the winning team, doing nothing because I just felt players should want to win, you know, for the pride of winning. I mean, I really spent a decade trying every approach out there, and it wasn't until about 5 years ago that I really started to chart winners and losers within the practice. And it was instantly the most effective and productive system that I had experienced. Over the last 4 years, I have had the fortune of helping dozens and dozens of coaches implement this competitive tracking system, which was named the Competitive Cauldron by Anson Dorrance, UNC women's soccer coach. Now, I implemented it with a youth basketball team, but I've also helped coaches implement it with underage soccer teams, high school baseball teams, rugby teams, college basketball, hockey teams. I mean, it's really for any sport. I'm excited to roll it out with my team this year as I've just accepted a role to coach a women's pro basketball team in here in Ireland. It's going to be foundational in my work with that team. If you want to learn more about the Competitive Cauldron and be able to implement it with your team, I've got a great video course out that's about 35 minutes long, and it comes with a spreadsheet to make tracking super simple. You're not going to need a manager or a coaching staff. You're going to be able to do it all by yourself. It's not going to be really time consuming, and you don't need to be good at spreadsheets. I mean, I am horrible at them. Luckily, my wife is in finance and she's brilliant at them, and she built this spreadsheet over the last 4 years for people like me who aren't only bad at spreadsheets, but we don't even want to be good at them. And you can get 10% off the course today just by using the coupon code CCPODCAST at coachtube.com where the course is hosted. There's a link in the episode details of this podcast. Please use that link or the one that comes out in the newsletter every Thursday. Once again, it's just a great system regardless of your sport and level. If you buy the course, it covers in detail how to appropriately implement as well as you could just shoot me with an email with any other questions you have. Before we get going into some of the strategies and the ways that you help players to work on the mental game, I actually want to have you share a little bit about your story and your background on how you came to be where you are today working with the Phillies. And I thought you could might actually start with a story that you share in your book about how a mentor in your life that was not a coach and they were not a psychology teacher, but it was actually an English teacher that has had a significant impact on you that's brought you here today.
Yeah, and he's had an even more significant impact than I wrote in the book, because he helped me as I was writing the book. But the story that you're referring to is about my college English teacher, my freshman year of college. So just a little bit of background, that I grew up in Riverside, California. I was born in Boston, and I don't really remember much of the East Coast, but grew up in Riverside. Went to UC Riverside and loved the game of baseball, and was always looking for a way to be involved in the game. And my first day of college, I walk into my second class. I had calculus in the morning, and then the next class was English. And I walk in and I kind of look around this room, and I don't really see a teacher. And there's a young guy that's talking to some students in the corner. And then as it, you know, becomes 9 o'clock, he just walks to the front of the room and sits on the desk and just kind of very casually starts talking to us about the class. His name was John Kerwin. And the entire class was meant to be about personal narrative, that we were going to explore our own stories. And we were going to read books and articles and poems and anything that John found out in the literature that was meant to teach personal narrative. So the first day of class, we had an assignment, and it was, you know, start a journal and write a journal entry about your favorite piece of writing of all time. And I had been lucky enough to go to game one of the 1989 World Series, and that was in Northern California. And one of my friends was from the Bay Area, and we went up and saw game one of this World Series, which was the Giants against the A's. And it was made famous by the big earthquake, which was game three. And so before game one, Mel Allen, the famous Yankees announcer, and then This Week in Baseball announcer, read from an essay that was written by A. Bartlett Giamatti, and he had died of a heart attack that summer, a week after suspending Pete Rose for life. And this essay was called The Green Fields of the Mind, and it was just the most beautiful thing I'd ever heard, and it just kind of haunted me. And so when John said, write about your favorite writing, I wrote about this essay, and I get my journal back a few days later, and it just says, see me. And I go to his office, and he says, this is amazing. I've never read this before. And just the way that you write about baseball, I think you should write about baseball the whole quarter. And that was just music to my ears. I couldn't believe it. And so just as I was writing different stories about baseball, and I had been a bat boy in the minor leagues in high school. And so I'd gone on some, you know, bus rides and been on road trips and just been around the game. And so as we're talking about this, he says, hey, did you see the story about the sports psychologist last night? And this will definitely date this story. It was October of 1991, and the Braves were in the World Series against the Twins, and both teams had gone from last place in 1990 to first place in 91. And John Smoltz had been a big part of that turnaround, that he was this young talent, had gone 2-12 in the first half and started seeing a sports psychologist named Jack Llewellyn. And as he started working with Jack, he turned everything around and went 12-1 in the second half and was the MVP of the National League Championship Series and pitched brilliantly in the World Series. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, he pitched 9 scoreless innings in game 7. And then the Braves lost in the 10th inning when they brought in their closer. So, Smoltz could have been the MVP of the World Series as well. And that was the first I heard of sports psychology.
What's incredible about that story is, you know, you had this teacher in your life that believed in you and instilled this belief that, you know, to pursue your passions and your interests. And based upon your book, my understanding, that's really had an impact on how you view your relationship with the athletes that you work with, and you see yourself almost more as a mentor than necessarily the mental skills coach. Could you speak to that a little bit?
So I left out one more sentence or two of that conversation with John, which was, you know, he said, I think you'd be really good at that. You have a really nice way with people, and you seem to understand and love the game, and maybe this is a career for you. And so he saw something in me that I didn't see in myself at the time. And I think that, you know, I said something in the book, something like, you know, I've never had a better way to get through to a player than just to tell him I believe in him. And so I think that's the mentoring that you don't have to be a mental skills coach to be a good mentor. And I think that John proved that. And I think everyone can take something in that, that there are people that look up to us. There are people that really value our opinions. And there are people looking for direction, too. And so when we're in these positions of leadership, I think we should be valuing that interaction ourselves, that what we say does mean a lot.
Jeff, one of the interesting things just about you relating that story there and one of the powers of this teacher being a mentor in your life, it sounds like his ability to observe. And I wonder in your role, you know, with the teams that you've worked with, you're kind of in a unique place where you're not necessarily an on-field coach. You don't necessarily have, you know, day-to-day operations responsibilities, and you kind of get to play the role of the observer. How does that factor into your ability to relate with players?
I think it means a lot. And, you know, we talk about a skill called active listening a lot in our department. And we actually talk to our coaches about it as well, that there's something about really hearing someone that I think people appreciate too. So observing takes a lot of different forms, and it's not just with your eyes.
Active listening. I love how you mentioned that's such an important skill, not just for you as a mental skills coach, but for all your coaches at the Phillies. And it's such an important skill so that we can understand our players, which I think really ties into your core philosophy as a mental skills coach. One thing that I really appreciate about your book is it's not the traditional type stuff around visualization and self-talk, but you really talk about the importance of players understanding themselves. There's a quote I want to read out from the book that I've shared with easily 50 plus coaches. And you say in the book, "My experience with sports psychology, it hasn't been breathing techniques and visualization and positive self-talks. For the most part, it hasn't been trying to fix players who have problems throwing strikes or throwing to first or getting out of slumps. Most often, my work with baseball players has been getting into the complex details of helping them understand themselves so that they can take advantage of the tremendous talent that they possess." Why is this so important?
Ironically, that was kind of formed in a late night when I started working for the Washington Nationals. And there's a hitting coach named Rick Eckstein, who is as fiery and intense as it gets. And he's David Eckstein's brother, older brother. And Rick and I knew of each other, but we didn't know each other until I came to the Nationals. And I came into the clubhouse my first day, and I introduced myself, and we got to know each other a little bit. And then he was one of the last ones to leave that day. And I was going to be presenting to the major league team the next day. And he said, "So what are you going to do tomorrow?" And I said, "Well, I have an introduction presentation that I give," and, you know, kind of that. He's like, no, "What are you going to do?" You know, kind of challenging me a little bit. And he's like, "Look, you've got about 30 seconds to win these guys. And if you don't, then they're not going to listen to anything that you have to say." And so then I kind of went back to my hotel that night, and I freaked out a little bit. And I was like, okay, well, now I got to start over. And I just thought about, okay, well, so I know I've got good information in this presentation, but how do I get these guys to actually care before I show it to them? And so I just did a little brainstorming and thought about, if I think about who I really am, and this kind of gets to your point, if I understand myself, if I know who I am and what I believe, I got to be able to put it very succinctly in a way that makes them go, yeah, okay, this is different. This is not what I think it's going to be.
And when it comes to working with the players to help them understand themselves so that they can reach their peak performance, what are some ways that you really try to engage with them to be able to come to those realizations or that level of awareness?
So part of my process is to do an assessment that helps me understand how people perform under pressure. But, you know, a lot of times these days, that's happening second. What's happening first is learning about the person, is just asking them, very simple questions. Where are you from? Tell me, you know, about yourself. How did you get here? And as they tell me that, I'm listening for and observing, to Nate's point. I'm listening for what's important to them. And as I hear that, I'm kind of trying to understand how they define themselves. And so self-evaluation as a skill, I think, is a very difficult one to be balanced. And we can talk about that at another time. But in helping people understand who they are, I think the most important things are getting people to really cut through to the core of what they believe and how they see themselves. And sometimes that can be difficult because sometimes we see ourselves negatively and sometimes we're afraid to look in the mirror.
And a lack of awareness of themselves, how have you seen that to be like really negatively impact players' performance in your experience? And why don't you just tend to jump to a lot of the just prescribing certain visualization or other mental training techniques?
Okay, so that kind of gets back to that core statement. I think there's a couple different ways to attack it and approach it, and I've actually evolved a little bit since writing that. What I believe is that people want to be the best that they can be in whatever they're trying to do, and so they're looking for ways to do that. That may be why they're listening to this podcast right now. I'm looking for tips. I'm looking for advice. I'm looking for an edge. And what they don't realize is that they've already got all the answers that they need. And I think they're looking in the wrong places sometimes. But so people will ask me, you know, do you do exercises? Do you do visualization? Do you do self-talk? And I'll say, well, sure, I do that. But what we're really trying to get is a better understanding of who you are. And I don't think people are always ready to hear that. And so I think sometimes doing some visualization and doing some self-talk and doing some of the things that they think they're going to get can open that door to something deeper. I think sometimes people will shy away from what I don't think is a very deep conversation, but sometimes people aren't ready for that right away. So I would say that I've learned that over the last few years since I wrote Intangibles, that I do see the value in the exercises and what I called in the book the short-term fixes, and now I'm calling them basic mental skills. I think people want that more because it's easier. You know, they don't have to really get into the depths of who they are. I don't think there's anything scary about doing that, and I definitely don't think it's therapy. I think it's much more of a simple, really keeping it simple as a phrase, just getting to the core of who you are and not having to worry about any of the other stuff.
We can do visualization. We can do all these mental work on these mental skills. But if a basketball player steps in the free throw line or they step out on the court or a football player goes in the field and they feel that their value and self-worth is tied to that performance, if they feel like that defines who they are as a person, then they'll always fall short. Like those type of, like you say, quick fixes oftentimes. And that's why we have to kind of go deeper and create a team culture or an organization where people are valued. And it just seems from all your book and just even the stuff you shared here, you really try to connect with the person.
Yeah. So let's unpack that a little bit. So what you're saying is someone steps to the free throw line, they feel like if I miss this shot, I'm not worth anything. Right. And so I think ultimately what we want to do is help them make the shot when they have to make it, right? That's performing under pressure, is I'm doing all this because in that big moment, I got to win the game. My approach to that doesn't take that out of the equation. And I think that's also what people want. They want honesty. They want to know, if this is important to me, then I want you to help me do it. So what I'm saying is, if you want to make the game-winning shot when everything's on the line, it's not just that you have to believe in who you are as a person. It's that it's the, you know, I'm doing my routine. I'm taking my deep breath. Why am I doing all that? Because this means so much to me, right? So instead of just focusing on practicing the routine and the deep breath, why does this mean so much to me, right? Like, why wouldn't I answer that question if every time I step to the line and the game is tied, I feel that feeling in my chest and I know I can take my deep breath and I know I can do my exercises, but shouldn't I understand myself for why I'm so competitive? Why does this mean so much that I want to win so badly? And so that's, I think, what I'm trying to get to is get to the real conversation around why I want to win. And I think that gets to the formula that I came up with is, and it's interconnected. You have to know who you are and you have to know what you want. And I think in understanding yourself, asking yourself what you want helps with that, because there are times when you think you want something and you don't.
So Jeff, if I could just take that a little bit further, you know, when I hear you talk about just this example of the free throw going to the line, having an understanding of why this is important, how do you undo, you know, the feeling of fear in that moment? I mean, for me to say, oh, I want to do it for my teammates, or I want to do it for my school, or I want to do it for my family, and or I love the, you know, whatever that answer is, but it not being a fear of I'm going to let all these people down. How do you turn that into something that's empowering for athletes?
Well, I probably can't do that in a timeout. You know, like I probably can't do that right in the moment. Other than just to say, like, again, I think to me, that's, I've had so many people come to me and say, I want to eliminate fear. I want to eliminate negative thoughts, right? Like, I want to get rid of these, this negative self-talk. And I think that's almost impossible to do. So I think what happens is, and I think this is something that I believe in any of any intangible quality, whether it was fear or lack of confidence or any of those kinds of things, I think the problem is not that we are afraid. The problem is that we panic when we feel that fear. I think everybody's afraid in some moment, right? But it's the fact that you go, wait, I'm not supposed to be afraid because I'm supposed to be mentally tough and I've been doing my breathing and I've been thinking my positive thoughts. So when I'm stepped to this line, I'm not supposed to be afraid. And that's not genuine. So I think if we teach people, it's okay to be afraid. It's okay to see that whole, everyone flashing in front of your eyes in that half a second where you grab the basketball and dribble it into your routine and then take that breath. If you feel like that's a natural feeling and it's something that everyone is going to feel at some point in their lives and in their basketball careers, then I think it goes away really quickly. I think if you go, uh-oh, I'm afraid, I'm thinking a negative thought, I shouldn't be doing this, let me take my deep breath. Well, that didn't help. Now what? Right? So that, I think, begins to snowball, whereas just being honest with yourself, I think, helps a lot.
You talk about listening with to your players, and then really just more of this kind of mentorship aspect of kind of leading them to certain realizations about themselves, even maybe to what they're feeling, why they want certain things. One of the questions that you share in your book that is really powerful is the question, where do you see yourself in 10 years? You pose that mm-hmm. question to certain players. When do you pose that? Why? What's the whole, what's the strategy behind kind of asking questions that players? So I think it relates a little bit to our conversation here.
Okay. So I think that chapter was actually called the 10-year plan. And, yeah. and that was talking to one of my favorite players ever, and a real character named Niger Morgan. And so with Niger, it was, you know, when am I going to get called up to the big leagues? And this is something I see a lot, is a guy in AAA that thinks he's ready. And for whatever reason, he's not being called up. Sometimes it has something to do with the roster configuration or not wanting to start a guy's service time, those kinds of things. And sometimes they're not as ready as they think they are. But regardless, the conversation is, well, I'm frustrated. I'm hitting 300 and I'm stealing all these bases. And why, what's going on with me? And in Niger's case, he had broken his thumb. And he was off to this incredible start, and he, I think, tried to do a drag bunt, and he dove into first base and dislocated his thumb and had to have surgery. And so he was just really dejected about that. And so I said, well, where do you see yourself in 10 years? And he says, well, I'll still be in the big leagues. And I go, well, so 10 years from now, do you think you're really going to remember if your big league debut happened in May or in September of, 2007? And so I think that's really the thing is we say, well, this is what I want. I want to be a big leaguer and I want it so badly and I've wanted it my whole life. And now it's so close and I can't focus on what I'm doing right now because all I can think about is that payoff. But I think some of those things like the timing of your major league debut, they don't really matter all that much in the big picture. And if you can think about where you're going to be 10 years from now and say, well, I'm still going to be playing in the big leagues and I'll have 9.5 years of service time, it's a little easier to go about your business on that Thursday or whatever it is.
Oh, I love that one. That's just a simple one, because I think there's so often that coaches run into challenges where a player is not a starter, or they're a little young, they're a freshman in college or a freshman in high school, and they've got a lot of promise, a lot of potential. I can think of one coach in particular that I was working with this year, and that player is just so antsy and so ready for that. And I think that could be reframed for a lot of coaches that are listening here today to use with our players. One of the other things that I found was really powerful that you really encouraged at your time, I know with the, I think it was with when you were at the Pittsburgh Pirates, and maybe you still do this today, which is you just really encourage a lot of the community service activities and like volunteering at the Boys and Girls Club. How the heck does that stuff relate to mental performance, in your opinion?
Well, it's that same word, perspective. I think perspective is what people can be missing a lot. And it's not that they don't have good intentions and good hearts, and they want all of these things. But again, it gets back to that word wanting, is knowing what you want. Is we work with very competitive people who are so focused on what they're doing and thinking about, and not to their own fault, they're reminded how they're doing every day, right? A baseball player, and I've even had this, I think this was in the book as well, where, you know, you can't walk to the plate without having all of your statistics on a giant scoreboard in front of you, right? So even if you don't want to see the statistics, and if you're not looking at the scoreboard and you go, I'm not going to look at my stats all year, a reporter can come to you and go, hey, you're hitting 350. How does that feel? Right? Like, so we're reminded how we're doing all the time. And I think there are plenty of jobs today where metrics and KPIs have really put a scoreboard on everything that we do. So we're always knowing how we're doing. And we're so focused on trying to do a good job at whatever that is, that I think we miss some of the things along the way. So having people volunteer and having them get involved in their communities is meant to just simply give them a chance to take a step back and be grateful for what they have, and recognize that the challenges that they have are really not challenges. And that the story I wrote in the book was one about a shortstop named Brian Friday. And it also had a little something to do with my own perspective and going running. And so it was called The Toughest 5 Minutes of My Day, that there comes a time when I'm running that I get to that, maybe the 5 minutes before the last 5 minutes, because the last 5 minutes, you can always seem to get yourself home. But that 5 minutes before the last five feels like the toughest to me. And I started thinking about, what if this was the hardest thing I have to do all day is run for the next 5 minutes? Wouldn't that be a pretty good life? And so, you know, if I'm the free throw shooter that we're talking about that might miss that shot and let everybody down and go, well, you know, what if the hardest thing I have to do today is miss this free throw? That would be a pretty good life, that's my biggest challenge.
Well, I know that's going to be really, really challenging, is helping professional athletes that are getting paid millions of dollars maintain perspective, right? A day in and day out, not just the money they're getting paid, but, you know, I can even think of, I'm not a baseball guy, no Nate is, but when Bryce Harper was coming to the Phillies, I mean, the expectations that were placed on him and the organization, and I can even remember in being, you know, living in the area of how that pressure just kind of was instantly placed on the organization. So is there anything else that you might feel that you have, and since you even wrote the book, that is really helpful, that might be able to be shared with coaches out there as far as helping the athlete to maintain perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think any kind of activity where you're taking a step back and you know, just kind of practicing gratitude is something that I think is a common thing now. And we even do it at the dinner table here with my family. We'll sit down at dinner and we'll go, okay, I want three, you know, what's three things that you're grateful for today? And it makes us feel a lot better every day. To your point, though, JP, I think I want to address the broad spectrum of people who are going to be listening to this, but I don't think you have to be a professional athlete to feel like you have a lot of expectations and pressure on you. And so I think it's almost easier to help professional athletes with perspective than it is to help a high school or college athlete. So I think to me that gets to the heart of what I really believe about what sports psychology or mental skills coaching is really about. And that is helping people understand the expectations that they have for themselves, because I think that's really where it comes from. It's not the coach. It's not the parent. Usually it's the athlete. It's the young man, young woman who says, I want to be great at this. And, I won't stop until I am. And that perspective, gets changed because the focus has to be so narrow on that goal to accomplish some of these great things.
So that's the end of the first part of our conversation with Jeff. So many great takeaways that I think we can apply not just to our team, but to our own lives. One thing that I know that I took from the conversation that I've gone away and have applied is just the moment of gratitude before you eat dinner. It's something that we've started to do as a family with my 4-year-old and my 3-year-old, just before we eat, taking the time to list out a few things that we're grateful for in our lives. It's been a game changer. So hopefully you got something that you can take back, not just to your team, but can apply within your own personal life. Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please share this episode with some other coaches out there, as well as leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts, whether it be iTunes, Spotify, or Google. Just take the time to leave us a review. It's a great way to support our work so we can keep these episodes coming.